Today's program is brought to you by Fire Cider, a health tonic based on the traditional New England cure-all of raw apple cider vinegar and honey. For more information, visit firecider.com.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live to the cosmos from the backyard at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Welcome to
Fun About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right.
What day is it? It's Monday.
It's Monday, June 20th. It's actually the summer solstice, and it is the full moon, so it is the strawberry solstice and the strawberry moon.
How often does that happen?
Not very often.
Once in a lifetime, I read this morning.
I love strawberries. But it's really hard to get strawberry flavor in fermented beverages.
Yeah, there's a lot of water in strawberries, and so it doesn't usually come out so good. I just made a strawberry sema, and it mostly just tastes like sema.
Gotta use a freeze-dried strawberry.
Yeah.
How did you make it? What'd you use?
But it doesn't take very much.
I used regular strawberries and cut them up into little tiny, teeny tiny pieces. But I guess they weren't very good strawberries.
Freeze-dried is the way to go. Even though they're expensive, they like pack a lot of...
They like melt into it, right?
Yeah, exactly. They like pack a lot of power.
When you're not making much at a time, they're not that expensive.
That's true.
Per liquid, I think.
Okay, so... We're back.
But I drive a solid gold rocket car. Just saying.
Yep. I was just going to say we're back and well-rested, but, you know, maybe that's not the case.
Well-rested? So true.
But we are back.
Yes. So we have actually kept the fun going after the National Homebrewers Conference. So I do have to give some shout-outs to people. So last Tuesday, it was super cool. Heritage Radio Network offered... everybody affiliated with Heritage Radio, hosts and interns and everybody, the opportunity to do a chocolate class at Ronnie Sue's Chocolates, which is on the Lower East Side. And I took it. It was super cool. We tasted Bean de Bar and learned all about how chocolate is made. It is a fermented product, so it's applicable. Then we also got to taste some of the truffles, and then we got to roll our own truffles. So it was super fun, and I would highly recommend it if you are in New York City. That's at Ronnie Sue Chocolates on the Lower East Side.
Just her chocolates alone are amazing. We've known Rhonda a very long time when she started this company. We used to host a lot of chocolate and beer pairings and chocolate beer and cheese pairings with Rhonda, and she's just been amazing, and the progression of her company has been awesome.
Yeah.
She's worth seeking out.
But it's tons of information and delicious treats. And you get to go home. We went home with a box of 15 truffles.
Like yeah.
Yeah, 15 truffles, and they're beautiful. I have a photo
they're
on my Instagram.
Pretty, yeah.
And then... we also went on with a little. We went home with a little thing of ganache. So that was Tuesday. Tuesday night it was actually Museum Mile Fest, which has nothing to do with fermentation. But I got to go to the Guggenheim and the Jewish Museum, which had the Isaac Mizrahi exhibit, and that was super cool. So I'm trying to take advantage of New York City this summer and keep my life a little more diverse. Wednesday night we actually ended up visiting Bridge and Tunnel Brewing Company.
That was Wednesday. Wednesday was a Big Alice. We went to Big Alice Brewing Company.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Because I am going to be a brewery in Long Island City, Queens, which makes me part of the committee now to help organize Queens Beer Week, which happens once a year in late May, and I'm excited to be part of this.
Oh, we went to Bridge and Tunnel Friday night.
That's right.
But I haven't actually been, even though I've had a bunch of different... Rich is the owner and brewer. And anyway, he has a small brewery in Ridgewood, the neighborhood of Ridgewood, Queens. It's really easy to get to via subway. And it was cool. It has a really good vibe and a great pizza place next door. So we actually also got to taste a bunch of their homebrew share. He did a wort giveaway to local homebrewers, and this was the evening that people brought back all the different beers that they made from a single wort. So Chris and I have participated in one of those via Kelso. There's another one actually coming up on Long Island, the first annual Long Island Homebrew Fest. It'll be the same kind of setup. You will pick up your wort on July 9th, and then everybody at Great South Bay Great South Bay Brewery. And then you'll bring it back August 20th for a big homebrew share. And if you want more information about that, you can go to hhcbc.org. And it's under the event page. It's called the First Annual Long Island Homebrew Fest. Oh, and then Thursday night, though. Wednesday night, we went to Big Al's. Thursday night, I actually went to Departed Souls, which is Brian Kolbaki's brewery over in Jersey City. Very easily accessible via the PATH train.
He was one of our first guests on this show about a couple months into it.
And also just celebrated his one-year anniversary of distributing his beer with one of my favorite styles of beer, a Gratzer, or Graditzky, depending what you want to go by. And then also I got to retaste. He won a bronze in the World Beer Cup recently for his gluten-free black IPA. Ooh. So I got to retaste that, and man, you would never guess this thing was gluten-free. It's delicious.
So what do they use as the base?
He uses a different a mixture, actually. I know he uses... I don't know what he used in this particular one.
We tried to ask him that on the show, too.
He has a trick for hops, But man, I don't understand... Like, He actually did tell me he got some of his judging sheets back, and two of the judges actually said that he probably could have placed with that beer in the regular black IPA category. So that's pretty cool.
And
I mean, that's how good it is.
Meddled in that.
Yeah, you would never guess this thing was gluten-free. So that's really cool. If you are anywhere near, if you come to visit New York City or you're in Jersey, it's really super easy on the PATH train.
And this is actually gluten-free, not gluten-reduced.
Yeah, and he does have regular beers as well as gluten-free beers. So he's doing some cool stuff out there, and it's also a good tasting room. Saturday, we did Summer Solstice number three, which is a collaboration between Chris and Josh Bernstein, and then over at Arrogant Swine, which is Tyson owned by Tyson Ho. So one thing we did bring, we pour a variety of home brews and commercial brews. So Chris and I made a cider booch. So Chris made a dry cider right before NHCI was in DC. So simple dry cider. We use Costco apple juice. Mm-hmm. And champagne yeast. I don't remember. I'm not sure which one, but dry champagne yeast. And then we took our regular kombucha at home, which is going strong. I blended it with a juice that I bought at this cool Polish grocery store that we have here in Greenpoint. So it's actually an apple juice base, but it has a little bit of prickly pear and lime. So it's called cactus juice. So I blended that with the kombucha. I let that ferment for maybe like 36 to 48 hours longer in our apartment, which is relatively warm. We filtered that, pasteurized it, and then blended it with the cider, and then carbonated
it. What was it like when you filtered it, when we filtered it, Mary?
So this does, that juice had some green food color.
That was so mucusy and so, was so crazy.
It was forming another SCOBY, and because it has a little bit of food coloring in it, it was actually a green SCOBY. So we filtered that out just to make it nice and able to run through the keg. And then we did pasteurize it because, again, like kombucha has a lot of yeast and bacteria in it. So if you pasteurize it, you're more likely to not
infect the rest of your equipment and gear.
Yes, including our kegs. So anyway, that was cool. And then we celebrated our friends John and Jess's wedding, who we know through the New York City Homebrewers Guild. So congratulations to them. We drank some great beer at their wedding on Saturday night. Okay, I'm almost done with my thing. I just have to give a shout out. We've had such a fun week, and it's so much fun getting back and visiting local breweries that either I have been to, like Big Alice, or I haven't been to, like Bridge and Tunnel. So anyway, support your local breweries, because
the diversity of experience has been very inspirational and is a large part of what this show is about.
Exactly.
It's worth noting.
Oh, and I will note the cider booch. So I blended about a gallon and a quarter of this juiced up kombucha with, you know, just a little less than 4 gallons for a 5-gallon keg. So that was our ratio. The cider we let go really dry, it was like $9.98. And it was actually a really nice blend because the kombucha was a little bit sweeter due to the juice. We didn't let it ferment all the way out. Anyway, that's acidity. Fun. That was our first cider kombucha blend. And I'm definitely going to continue to do those because it was delicious and a really fun beverage. So let's announce our first Foment About It beverage contest.
Yes.
It is a Pruno contest. So I think we have mentioned on the show that our friend Flint, who is works over at Rockaway Brewing Company, one time we rolled into Rockaway one Thursday night, and Flint always has something that he's made that he'll give you samples with as you drink the Rockaway beer. So one time he had Pruno. So he had a friend who had been in jail, worked at a jail?
Something like that.
Yes. And,
don't ask
and
too
he,
many questions.
Yeah, and he made Pruno. So we're going to have our first ever Pruno contest. So
Pruno is prison wine. It's wine that is physically made from, or hooch, some sort of alcoholic beverage that is made from basically anything you can find around a prison, something with sugar, something with yeast. And you just let it ferment. Usually in the toilet.
Or in a plastic bag. Pretty common. So our...
But if you really want to be traditional for this competition...
Don't ferment. We are not advocating fermenting in your toilet. So
if you have a second toilet that you can use for the fermentation...
A new toilet maybe fine. You're going to install but haven't yet. Okay.
Or you have a baby who's outgrown his potty chair.
As clean as any other. You know?
Go for it.
That's true. Okay, so... we don't have many rules here. We're going to be a little bit lax with this. We are going to allow and encourage you to use dry yeast. You can open ferment this or spontaneously ferment it. That's fine, especially if you're using fruit. Probably will have yeast on it, but we are absolutely allowing dry yeast. So we're going to talk about our Pruno contest on August 8th. So if you would like to participate, all you need to do is make your own recipe of Pruno at home. Write down everything that you, all that your ingredients and the process that you used and your tasting notes. And if you'd like to participate, either shoot us an email at fermentaboutit@gmail.com or tweet at us at fermentaboutit. And
we'll be back with what the prizes are. We're still working that out.
Yeah, but we'll definitely have you. We want people to call in and give us your experience. So I'm going to give, I think Rachel has a similar recipe. I'll give a recipe that I found online. But we're going to, there's a few recipes online. If you Google it, any of those recipes are fine. But think about maybe 10 peeled oranges, 10 soft apples, a cup of sugar, 16 ounces and 1 cup warm water, 8 ounce can of fruit cocktail, and 1 packet of raisins. Another recipe is 10 to 12 oranges, 1 large can of fruit cocktail, 3 cups of sugar, and then a lot of times people make this in a 1 gallon Ziploc bag, but you could also do it. We are going to allow any kind of reused water container as well. And we would love to have photos. So if you decide
please
to do this, you know, tweet at us or Instagram and just name us Ferment About It.
Yes. And I think that the kind of fun of Pruno is that, like, it's a drink of desperation, and then therefore you don't usually have a recipe. So just kind of, I think for mine, I'm just going to kind of just... make it up as I go along. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that turns out.
We're trying
to
get to
enter the contest.
I thought we were all doing the
yes,
contest.
Yes, we're
okay,
definitely.
Of course, we're doing the contest. Right. We're going to have a ferment about it. Ferment off.
We don't actually. Yeah, exactly. I will say there was also, so I get Google alerts on ferment and fermentation, and occasionally there's some really interesting news. So this is from the weird world of fermentation. Turns out last week there was a piece of bog butter. So bogs are these areas that are commonly found in Scotland, England, and I believe Ireland as well. Mm-hmm. And they often use, that's where they have like the bog man and the bog woman has been found, because they preserve based on their temperature and also the chemical composition of the soil. So they actually recently found a 10 kilogram, which is 22 pounds mm-hmm. of bog butter that was completely preserved and over 2,000 years old. However, that is not the oldest piece of bog butter. There's actually, a few years ago in 2009, 77 pound in a barrel was found that was over 3,000 years old. So that's pretty interesting. They do say that they're both edible. They don't recommend you trying it, but I think that's pretty interesting to think about longest term fermentations that are
well, it's not
preserved.
Just a fermentation that's long term. It's like a fermentation that you're preserving for like your descendants.
Yes.
Look, this is my legacy.
You could, if you live in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, you could also, you know, store things in bogs.
You might be, yeah.
Sure,
I mean, any cold climate, right? Because these bogs are basically cold. They're acid and oxygen free, and they're basically conditions that eliminate any bacteria. So the interesting thing about this bog is that it wasn't found in any kind of wood barrel. It was just preserved on its own in the bog. So pretty cool. Another reason to ferment. You can leave legacies for your great, 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 great children. And on that note, let's go into the show finally. Oh, no. Chris has an announcement.
No. We're 17 minutes in. We got to get to this show. I will do my announcements at the end, but it's all been great. We're going to take our first break, and we'll come back with our guests. Thank you for listening to Men About It. Today's program was brought to you by Fire Cider. Did your grandmother ever tell you to drink raw apple cider vinegar? It's good advice, and more common than you may think. For generations of New Englanders, a tot of vinegar was a morning ritual. Taken daily, a tablespoon of unfiltered apple cider vinegar can help support immune function and digestive functions. To the base of certified organic apple cider vinegar, Fire Cider added whole, raw, certified organic oranges, lemons, onions, ginger, horseradish, habanero pepper, garlic, and turmeric. They let this mixture steep for 6 weeks at room temperature to preserve the living vinegar culture and delicate flavors of the ingredients. Lastly, they blend a generous helping of raw wildflower honey into the mix. The result is potent but balanced, offering layers of sweet, tart, and spice. Fire Cider tastes great on its own or as an addition to tea, juice, or salad. Fire Cider ships direct from their online store and is available at over 500 locations nationwide. Use their store locator to find one near you and ask for a free sample. For more information, visit firesider.com. We are here in the studio. It is Monday, the 20th of June, and we are about to introduce our guest tonight. You may recognize her voice from various other For Men About It episodes. It's one of our favorite guests, Cheryl Passwater of Contraband Ferments.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
You recently went on a really great, fascinating trip that we are all, everybody in this room is very jealous about, and let's talk about that. And I'm going to let you introduce. I'm going to let you introduce what it is.
Yeah. So, Sander Katz, sort of the.
The Sander Katz.
I call him the Godfather of fermentation.
Kinda, yeah.
Me too.
You know, he calls himself a fermentation revivalist and a generalist, which I love. Yeah. So Sander runs an amazing residency called Walnut Ridge that is a couple times a year. And I recently got to spend time in the mountains of Tennessee off the grid, his 1820s cabin, with a group of really fucking awesome people, fermenting and learning from him and seeing all his magic. And
how long was it? How do you get to do it?
It depends. I've heard they've been at different lengths. Mm-hmm. Ours was about a week long. So, yeah, you know, you're just locked up with like this small group of people like doing all things nerdy, and this was really cool this time around because we also were teaming up with the American Gut with the Human Microbiome Project, so we were actually running kind of our own lab and being our bodies are being tested, and they're, you know, having a swab all of our ferments that we have all brought in from different parts of the country and different parts of the world to this residency. So the swab action got really big.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, if we had our hands on an animal, it was swabbed also.
Did they lab these swabs, and was there a certain commonality? Any recognizable or worth speaking of?
Well, they're still mapping everything right now, yeah. So we haven't gotten results back. I know they're still logging things, and it's probably going to be a couple more months, I think. But, yeah, they're actually, this is the first time that they have actively followed a group of people. But not just a group. I mean, they're following groups of people, but people who are working in fermentation at such a high, mm-hmm. you know, capacity, and not just, you know, making it, but also ingesting it. So they are, you know, testing us before the residency, during the residency, after the residency, to see. They really are looking to see, you know, how our biodiversity may change. You know, but then also this is one of the first times that a lot of different ferments have been mapped, you know, where we really get to look and see like, well, what, you know, we have ideas and we know components and we know certain bacteria and we know what's happening, but, you know, this is the first time to have so many different things, you know, mapped. And it's, I think it's a very different thing to say like, okay, like, you know, we could all each go get a cabbage from the same soil, but if we all take it to a different location and we ferment it, what that makeup is going to be very different. And so I think it's really exciting to see what a lot of these things look like as they start to come in, and to really see, you know, how this, you know, biodiversity really, you know, changes and adjusts and, you know, creates theories around how we're made up and sure. what happens in the body.
How many different states or regions were represented in your group?
A pretty big diversity. You see here, I represented New York. We had somebody from California, somebody from Denver, somebody from Chicago, somebody from South America, somebody from Pennsylvania. We had somebody from Mississippi, who also just launched her fermentation company officially today.
Oh, very cool.
In a commercial kitchen, which is really exciting. Hey, Lauren, yay. And we see here, what else? Just kind of all over.
The person from South America bring anything fermented over? Are we not going to talk about that?
A lot of matcha. mate. We were drinking a lot of mate. But everybody brought what they could bring. I mean, you're flying there, and then you're also camping out on Sanders' property. So yeah. It's like, you know, for me, it was like, I'm flying from New York City, and I have to bring my camping gear and what I'm going to need for a weekend. I'm trying to squeeze ferments in my bag and get them through security. And right. So, but I mean, a lot of people did bring things, and people who drove, I definitely brought a lot of things. And, everybody collectively, we had quite an interesting pool of stuff to, try out for sure.
So a week or so before this, we asked Cheryl if she would do some interviews while she was there, because what a great opportunity. So, you did do many interviews.
I did.
And we're going to play them now.
It was really fun.
All right, this is Cheryl recording from Walnut Ridge for Ferment About It. I am sitting here with, what is your name?
Lauren Rhodes.
And Lauren, where are you from?
I am originally from Colorado, but I live in Jackson, Mississippi.
Awesome. And what are you most looking forward to making this week?
I am really looking forward to this afternoon. We're making miso and tempeh, and those are two ferments that I'm really excited about. I haven't made them before.
Okay. Are there any other ferments that you are just dying to make this week, or any highlights of other things that we've made this week so far?
Yesterday there were some, like, pretty crazy beverages that I had no idea existed, like the rice beer.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah, and it's made with white rice and Chinese yeast ball, and it tasted yogurty. It was so delicious.
Yeah, that stuff was amazing. I really liked it. I'm really excited to grab some yeast balls as soon as I get back to New York City.
I did not even know what those were.
Yeah, and the booza, that was pretty crazy.
The booza. Or the zakvas.
There was the zakvas, and then there was like a little bottle of booza. Maybe booza. That we tried last night, or well, it was like a little bit. This was sitting around in a little bottle.
I've never seen so many bottles in my life. Yeah. It was just like everything is a new wondrous potion.
Yeah, I'm amazed how many ferments that we have created up to this point. Uh-huh. It's pretty mind-boggling.
And then everyone has brought their own thing to share. Yeah. And so, like, we've been trying tons of different kombuchas and water kefirs and.
Yeah.
Different kinds of sauerkraut, so that's been really fun.
I feel like we've walked our way through, like, half of the Art of Fermentation book in, like, 2 days. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm Kenny Point.
Cool, and where do you live, Kenny?
I live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I'm originally from Washington, D.C.
Right on. And so, Kenny, I'm just curious, like, we've had a lot of random conversations this week. You have quite a diverse background in foraging and you know, some gardening and farming types, processes and other things. So what led you to fermentation?
I've always been interested in gardening. I've been gardening since I was a kid and getting into things like composting and compost teas and beekeeping and mushroom cultivation. And I just, you know, also had an interest in fermentation and realized that there was kind of a common link between them being these microorganisms that are doing the work to, you know, certain process and even whether it was beekeeping or composting, they were all behind the scenes working to, you know, accomplish that goal of breaking something down. And so that just kind of led into fermentation, and I was curious about it, and I was a little intimidated by it, thinking that, hey, I might do something wrong or come up with something that's poison or mold. And so I was a little hesitant to just jump right in, but I finally did and started with a few simple vegetable ferments. Mm-hmm. And that, then I read Sanders' books and I just heard about this workshop and said, hey, that sounds interesting. So I applied and I'm here.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've all, you know, Jeff and I were talking about, or Sandra and I were talking about, you know, like this, you know, we've kind of this closeness of this community, you know, we've all been here for a few days together and making meals together and learning together and making together and, you know, nerding out and reading books and starting a bacteria band and, you know, all these different things that we've been doing. I'm just curious, you know, I think if you, you know, could pick a highlight, I think, of the week, what would that be for you?
Well, I say the highlight has been like the meal preparation, because like you said, we've all kind of banded together and, you know, every meal has been, you know, we've improvised and we've come up, brainstormed as to what we want to do. And we always incorporated ferments in those meals. And I've never eaten so many different fermented products and fermentations that I've never even heard of, didn't know anything about. Yeah. So that was really cool. And I just enjoyed, you know, the aspect of us coming together and not knowing what we were going to create, but everything turned out great. You know, all the food was delicious.
I was one of my favorite things too. And then also, you know, I think, you know, one of my favorite moments was, I remember like one of our first community meals, like it was like, you know, lunch. And we're like, let's whip together a salad. And we were working on the same salad and you just out of nowhere, you're like, I will go forage for chickweed, maybe some garlic onions. and I was just like, of course.
Yeah, that salad turned out great.
That was a fantastic salad. Mm-hmm. It was so good. You know, and so, you know, heading home back to East Coast, you know, is there any, like, a particular ferment or thing that you're just like, I am dying to make this the minute I walk in the door?
There is, and that would be the tempeh. Because, you know, that was one of the things that I wanted, coming here, I wanted to learn more about and how to prepare it, how to make it. Finding out, you know, not only how to do it, but also how good it is, and, you know, to have some fresh tempeh. Because that's, you know, I've always had commercial brands of tempeh, but they just don't compare to what we made here this week.
Oh, yeah,
but
they suck compared to homemade tempeh.
And
nothing compares.
And seeing how much you can do with it even in the kitchen after you've made it, you know, the way that we prepared the tempeh. It was just great. Well,
and that you can make a lot of it, and, you know, it's easy just to throw it in the freezer and then you have it for when you want it. Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, some tempeh sausages when I get home. Definitely. I have a bunch of tempeh made before I left. So.
And you made it before, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the coolest things is I feel like everybody here has got different skill sets and different ferments that I think are, you know, apparently I'm the nut cheese girl that, you know, like, or this group it turned out, you know.
Yeah, and but, I'm looking forward to staying in touch with everyone. Yeah. You know, so that'll be great, too, and keep in touch and continue sharing, whether it's cultures or ideas and techniques. That'll be great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Cool. Thanks, Kenny.
Okay.
I'm Sean Kaminsky. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, and where do you live, Sean?
I live in Brooklyn, New York.
And what has brought you to Walnut Ridge?
I came to Walnut Ridge because I'm working on a documentary about fermentation. And I started the project a while ago. I had just finished working on a documentary about seeds called Open Sesame, The Story of Seeds. And while I was touring around for that, I would often meet fermenters. And because of meeting fermenters, I got some water kefir. And I think water kefir was probably my, even talking about gateways, was probably my gateway to fermentation. Maybe a little bit different than other people, but I was already meeting some hardcore fermenters. So I started to do that, and I got really, really into that. And people started to mention the idea of, you know, making a documentary about fermentation. And I realized there's a lot of parallels between seeds and seed saving and fermenting, and the culture surrounding fermentation. The idea that the cultures are passed from hand to hand, the idea that these tiny, helpful microbes that make us all this delicious food can't be seen, they kind of beg to have their story be told, but they don't have their own voice except as far as bubbles and taste and the food. So it kind of attracted me to that, and I thought, well, this is the next logical documentary for you to make, is about fermentation, and so I started. And of course, immediately everyone that I met was like, you have to talk to Sander Katz.
Yeah.
And I did get the chance to meet with him briefly in New York, and I interviewed him there, but just in my apartment. And I read about his residency, and I've really been wanting to come down here because I know that I knew that that would be like the full-on experience, and it really has been.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm really excited about your documentary because I know we talked a few months ago, and then because I think we had had a conversation about how I keep miso under my bed in my bedroom in Brooklyn.
Right.
Yeah, and then so yeah, it was a pleasant surprise to show up, and I'm like, we're like, wait a minute, we've corresponded
yeah,
over
yeah.
email and things, but we have never met in person. So I think that was really cool. You know, if you could pick one or two highlights of your experience here, you know, things that blew your mind, I guess, you know, what would one or two of those things be?
Oh, the energy of the people combined with the, I guess the energy of the ferments all bubbling together, because it really, it felt like there's something special about making these foods that have this intangible aspect of the unexpected, and then the, you know, when you come together in a group of people, you don't know what you're going to get.
Like, yeah.
In a way, like, all the people who came here were like, this was the starter, I guess, and then, like, we were like the microbes, and then, like, you know, we...
It's exactly like that. Yeah, it's just like,
and
then
you don't know what you're going to get, you know? Yeah. And so I think that that was the excitement, is seeing, you know, especially since I've been documenting it and really, you know, talking to you guys, and I interviewed everyone who wanted to be. And it's seeing that, like, deliciousness come to life as far as the residency.
No, it's, like, it's been such an amazing... I mean, even I think we've all kind of talked about, even as we've gone along making these kind of communal, you know, these dinners and meals together and, you know, breakfast and lunch and dinner, and how, like, our meals have, like, improved and, just changed. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, there's something you've said when you... have a group of people and all you're doing is making and eating and doing dishes.
But it's not easy for a group of people to make a dinner together from such a diverse range of ingredients, all this stuff. Like, how do you choose?
And
but everyone's just like, bang, bang, bang. And food
needs, because we have some vegetarians, we have a couple gluten-free people, we have people who are meat eaters and or like eat a lot more meat than other people. Yeah, right. Like just different things. Cool. Well, Sean, I look forward to hanging out when we get back to Brooklyn.
Me too, Sean.
And we will talk soon.
My name is Manda Pendleton. I am a clinical herbalist and nutritionist, and I live in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, we've had a lot of fun trying a lot of your kombucha concoctions this week, especially. You know, what was one highlight of this trip for you?
I feel like it's just the magic of being here at Sandra's home and really connecting with like-minded fermentistas and ferment addicts. So it just felt like a real blessing to kind of be here with our mentor and kind of taking it to the next level in terms of inspiration and just feeling the love of the earth and the bacteria and mold and everything mixed together. It was just all wonderful. The food was like,
the food was crazy. All those community meals. So I know you're driving, you know, this is our last day. You'll be driving back to Denver. You know, do you think you're just going to be like thinking up of like all your next concoctions on the drive back?
Yeah, you know, a lot of them, some will come to me, like, I feel like it's just really intuitive for me in the kitchen in terms of, I loved, like, Sandra saying that it doesn't really weigh things out because I do it the same way. I'm kind of like, a pinch of this, a handful of that.
Yeah, and, same way too.
And just, like, really using what's available and local and fresh and, you know, I feel like that's a real aspect of the movement is getting it as local as possible, and that's why I love also incorporating the wild foods, because they're kind of, our brain says yes, ding 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 ding.
Yeah, right. No joke. Awesome. Thanks, Amanda. I'm at Walnut Ridge in Tennessee with Sander Katz at his awesome fermentation residency. Hi, Sander.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. So, you've just spent a week with a group of people from around the U.S. and also Argentina. So, tell me, what were your highlights of, what are your highlights of this adventure?
Well, I mean, for me, getting to see, you know, other people's excitement about fermentation, you know, really fuels me in the work that I'm doing. And so, you know, having a group of people who are passionate about things, who are, you know, eager to learn and, you know, explore fermentation more deeply and to get to, you know, be a guide and a catalyst for that is just really exciting and fun for me.
Yeah. You know, I've had the opportunity to see you teach, you know, before, and then after, you know, spending, you know, days here kind of, you know, gathering your wisdom, you know, I'm actually just really curious, like, what's your favorite part of teaching? You know, is it the creativity? Is it, you know, being able to kind of pass on, you know, all this knowledge that you have?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I would say that it's the, you know, kind of practical skill sharing aspect of it that, you know, kind of keeps me doing this kind of work. Mm-hmm. You know, just because it's been so, I mean, it's been so fun and fulfilling and satisfying for me, you know, exploring fermentation and, you know, like the more I learn, the more interested I get. But, you know, my favorite part of it really is just sharing the information with people, and especially, you know, especially given the fact that, you know, sort of so many people bring, you know, a little sense of, like, nervousness about it or not sure where the, you know, kind of edges of what they can do safely are. You know, it's just fun to, you know, be with a group of people and, like, think outside the box and try doing different things. And, you know, what really gets me excited is demystifying fermentation for people. And so this was a really, you know, kind of, you know, passionate group of people to do that with.
Yeah. You know, I think of, you know, I feel like, you know, a lot of us have been talking about, you know, fermenters, you know, what was your gateway, kind of your gateway drug to, you know, to fermentation. You know, and I've always kind of thought about, I was like, all right, well, probably kombucha or sauerkraut were my gateways. But then I feel like there's always been like another level of, I feel like, the gateway into like fermentation. Do you have any other like particular ferments that just were like the things that like blew your mind?
Well, I mean, definitely I would say that, you know, sauerkraut was my gateway into fermentation, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe sour pickles, because, you know, they were of a beloved food of my youth that, you know, maybe predisposed me to appreciating flavors of fermentation. Mm-hmm. But the first thing that I learned how to make was sauerkraut. I have made sauerkraut, you know, continually since I've learned how to make it. I mean, I don't think there's ever been a time when I didn't have a batch going. You know, since I learned how to do it in 1993. So I would say for me too, sauerkraut has been my gateway, but, you know, I feel like my mind keeps on getting blown, you know, learning other ferments. Like, you know, we made some doux together, which is the Persian style yogurt soda. And I mean, that's something that I've been enjoying drinking it at Middle Eastern markets for years and years. But the contemporary Persian cookbooks all say add carbonated water to yogurt, which is all, you know, fine and good. But, you know, my curiosity is always like, how are things traditionally made? Like, okay, there haven't always been bottles of carbonated water you could add to yogurt. And if this food is traditional, how was it made before? So when a chef who had explored Persian cuisine finally was able to, you know, show me the starter for making doux, and it was so ridiculously simple of, you know, putting a little bit of bulgur wheat with water and then waiting till that gets bubbly and then using the bubbly water to add it to the yogurt, you know, it was just this, you know, huge light bulb going off, like, oh, of course there's a simple way to do it. So, so sauerkraut was my gateway, but, you know, I feel really excited by the, you know, just the ongoing education that I receive, you know, every time I, you know, talk to someone about fermentation.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited. My mind is blown by between the doux and the, you know, zakvas and the bozu, and like, you know, it's just all these things where I'm, you know, even for myself, I'm just like, yeah, I'm really ready to go make more things and stuff. Is there anything else you want to share with us? I mean, you've created such an amazing space for everybody, so.
Well, I'm, you know, another thing that's really fun is for me to just, you know, watch the, you know, the group bonding and gelling. And, you know, at this point, I've become so aware that, you know, what I have to share with people is only one piece of what they're getting when they, you know, come to these residencies. And, you know, I think, you know, there's just, you know, people really, really bond over their, you know, kind of shared enthusiasm about all this and about, you know, sort of trying all these, you know, different, you know, kinds of fermented vegetables and other, you know, weird beverages and concoctions. So, you know, it's just really fun for me to, you know, be able to, you know, foster an atmosphere where it's not just about me, you know, sharing, you know, what I know with people, but just, you know, having everybody, you know, share what they've learned and things that they've made with each other.
Yeah. My only last question, actually, you know, I was kind of thinking about it, you know, spending time with everybody is, it seems like, every person here has like two or three things I think that they're especially good at. Either it's like different ferments, you know, we have chefs in the group, we have, you know, food advocates, we have people who are doing all kinds of different, you know, things. And I was just, you know, and especially being such a small group, and obviously, yeah, groups that gel together really well, you know, which is amazing. But, you know, how do you think about how you're curating, kind of bringing these people together, like when you, in that process, or of like picking people for Walnut Ridge?
Yeah, I mean, the situation mostly has been that I get, you know, way more interest in the program than we have room for. Okay. You know, I think part of what makes, you know, the time together so special is that it's a pretty limited size group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a really grueling, awful process for me. Usually almost everybody who expresses interest seems like they'd be a great person to have. You know, I end up feeling like I'm a little bit arbitrary in the choices that I end up making. But, you know, I'm definitely looking to not have people who are all coming at it from the same place. I'm looking to have people who are, you know, coming at it from different angles and also trying to have some, you know, geographic and, you know, gender and, you know, ethnic diversity in it. So, I mean, I look at a lot of different things and then always end up feeling like I'm being arbitrary anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, I thank you for having us because I know everybody has had a really amazing time and appreciates your generosity. I mean, you're bringing us into your home, you know, and letting us be part of that. So thank you. Thanks for having us.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, it's been really wonderful, you know, having you here and really this whole group.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Sander.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl, for bringing that in.
Great job.
That was beautiful.
That was super awesome.
Yay. A testament to Sander's love for fermentation is his sharing and his philosophy on that. I mean, a lot of it's the passion for fermentation and what the doors it opened up in his life and his selflessness of sharing the art of fermentation and his whole book and doing this in his residency and inviting people to his home and sharing it like that. Just, it's beautiful. That's gorgeous.
So we got to ask about the fermented beverage that you guys talked about.
Doug. Oh, the Doug?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, Doug. Probably one of my favorite ferments of the week. It's an Iranian fermented beverage. It's like a yogurt soda. And I think it was especially a little bit special just because the recipe that Sander taught us was passed on and taught to him by Jeff Lucas, who is a chef and a fermenter who kind of suddenly passed away this fall at a pretty young age. And I'd met Jeff at the Boston Fermentation Festival, and I had gotten to sit in on a couple of his workshops and things and had really sort of connected with a lot of the stuff he was working on. So I think for me, it was really special to see that kind of this recipe sort of come back around. You know, not to mention it's freaking yummy. And, you know, so just it's a combination of basically, you know, soaked grain, I think generally barley or, you know, other things. You can also make like an Rejuvelac, and then it's that and like homemade yogurt, and you basically, you know, water it down, you ferment it, you carbonate it, and you get this like
gorgeous, rich yogurt soda. And you can put mint in it, and it's really, yeah, it was really yummy. I mean, I'm a big fan of, like, fermented kind of beverage, you know, beverages, sodas, and ginger beers and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was really cool.
So
Mary was playing with some of this.
I just do yogurt, seltzer, and mint. So, okay. But okay, it's a relative of that beverage.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it with soaked grain, so that would be a lot of fun.
Well, he spoke to it. The reason he did the soaked grain was to get the bubbly.
Yeah,
you know, then,
yeah. So that's like a natural instead of adding seltzer, which we force carbonate at home. So yeah.
I mean, it was crazy because, like, I think by the end of the week we had covered something like 63 ferments.
Ooh.
Like, I mean, it was just, it was nonstop. And even when we had breaks, it's like everybody there is just so nerdy that you just want to keep going. So it's just kind of like, no matter what, you just were always like thinking fermentation, eating fermentation, making fermentation, talking with other people, brainstorming what you were going to do next. With, like, it was a nonstop conversation. Like, the minute you just kept hearing people like, the minute I get home, I'm going to do da 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 da. You know, I mean, I had this list. I walked in my apartment with a list of, like, you know, 50 things that I was, like, thinking about making or improving upon or altering. And I just, like, stuck it right on my door of my bedroom. So I was like, okay, every time I walk in and out of my apartment, I'm going to just start tackling, you know, this list. I'd already ordered 5 gallons of raw milk before I had left Tennessee to, like, have it delivered, like, have it ready for pickup, like,
for delivery to your Pennsylvania address, of course, because New York State. to your Pennsylvania state.
Yeah, my Pennsylvania address.
I dug also, Sean. I loved all those interviews. It was really great to see everybody. You could tell there you had a mix of people there.
Yeah.
I particularly like the soundtrack of the people, like listening to birds. I felt the green. I could hear the green, and some more than others.
Yeah.
just behind you in Tennessee. So it seemed like there's space enough to think about and do all these things, where now you're back to New York to this craziness.
Yeah. I mean, it's in a beautiful space, and I think Sander has really cultivated, it's like his home is your home, you know, and it's a space to learn. And, you know, I've studied with a lot of people in a lot of different capacities in different areas of my life. And, you know, I think he's one of the most generous teachers I've ever worked with. And it's a lot to have everybody also, like, you're with everybody all day teaching them, and people are asking you a million questions, and then they're in your house and camping out on your property, and, like, you know, in your house at 6 a.m. making coffee in their pajamas, and, you know, and I mean, but he's I think he's handled it with a lot of, you know, grace and kind of amazingness, and, you know, it makes for an amazing learning experience when somebody, I think, can do that, and they want everybody to have and walk away with, like, the most they can out of an experience.
And I think not all of us can go to Sander Katz's place. Yeah. Not
maybe
everybody 15 is out
or 20
there
of us per year.
But I think this is another thing. I mean, we were lucky in New York City to have a fermentation group, but look at, like, homebrewing clubs. There should be more fermentation clubs. It's easy to get, you know, try to seek out people in your community and set something up. Sander Katz's book, The Art of Fermentation, is amazing. It is the Bible of fermentation. So, I mean, you could easily work that, you know, work through that with a bunch of friends. And I think this is another, it's a great inspiration for getting together, forming your own community wherever you are.
Well, I think fermentation, I mean, just like all food, like, it brings people together. Mm-hmm. It's community, and it's something we spend a lot of time doing, or traditionally cultures spend a lot of time, you know, doing. And it's something that I think is definitely a little bit lost in the American culture, but it's something that's, you know, really important. And it's like, you know, it's like I co-organized the New York City Fermentation Meetup group. And then, you know, I have people that I teach. I had a group of people from one of my workshops recently call me up in the middle of the afternoon. They're like, okay, we're all together with our sauerkrauts and we're ready to taste them, but we're like, we're scared. Will you just be on the phone with us? And I was just like, okay. And they're like, we're going to do it. And I'm like, great. Like, scrape the top off and, like, get it in your mouth. Let's do this, you know? And, you know, and, like, but, like, listening to them having this experience, like, on speakerphone in the background, and, Yeah, I think it's really, you know, it's really cool to, you know, to kind of see that and see how, I mean, I think education always brings people together. I think food always brings people together.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think when you start getting to really weird things like growing bacteria and, you know, being totally excited about just this idea of breaking something down, it's safe and it goes against kind of all this, these things that we naturally, you know, are inclined to, you know, be, I guess, think that is bad for us. You know, it's like, I always kind of feel like it's like a, as my niece and I would say, an in it to win it sort of mentality. That happens, you know, you just go for it. And I think that's really, you know, I think that's really cool.
Totally.
You spoke to you started the New York City Fermentation Meetup?
I didn't start it, but I'm a co-organizer.
You're a co-organizer. Yeah. When does that meet? How do we find out more information about that?
New York City Ferments is, you can find us on the Meetup website. We meet on the first Monday of every month at Jimmy's number 43 on the Lower East Side. Or East Village, I guess, technically. And we meet at 6:30 p.m. We usually have a theme for whatever the month is going to be. But, you know, we also encourage people, like, bring what you're making. And, you know, people bring their projects and their experiments. And, you know, we chit-chat and we eat pretty much anything put in front of us.
In the back room at Jimmy's number 43 East 7th Street between 2nd Avenue and Bowery.
Way to whip out that address there.
I know that. I know that as well.
That's good.
Home away from home. Once again, Contraband Ferments.
Yeah, contrabandferments.com. All right. That's my project.
And you can also find you on Facebook, Contraband Ferments on Facebook.
Yep, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on all the things. We have a ton of workshops coming up, so you can definitely go to our workshops page. We are teaching all over the place and some upcoming fermentation festivals, and our fermentation CSA is doing a run this summer, and all the things are happening.
Right on, Cheryl. I love your work, and thank you so much for joining us and for listening to those things. Before we do officially get out of here, I am going to commit to the events and little things I have to say in the beginning of the show. If you're still listening, thank you for sticking around.
There'll be five more minutes.
All right.
We're almost done.
June 25th, this Saturday, we got a twofer. We got an amazing twofer. It's going to be one of those days where just like there's so many things going on. Particularly these two that are going to be so very fun. Oh my God, what's happening? The New York City Brewers Pro-Am. It is basically a collaborative effort between Bitter and Esters and Brew to Share, and they are basically putting pro brewers with home brewers, Bronx Breweries up with Javier Serrano, Folks Beers with Charlie Gothard, Greenpoint Beer and Ales with Will Rader, KCBC with Phil Clark, Strong Root Brewery with Mary and Eric Kimball Booth. They're going to serve some beers, and we are going to vote on them, and then if whoever wins is going to brew that beer on the Pro Brewers system. This is in the afternoon. You can go to bitterandesters.com and go to their events pages from 1 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. It is at Covenhoven in Prospect Heights. Immediately thereafter, at Kelso Brewing Company, we are celebrating our 10th year as Kelso Brewing Company, and I'm diving into the barrels and serving some barrel stuff. We're going to have DJ Rabbi Darkside, an old friend of mine, Freestyle Mondays. We are going to have... There's a guy that has been getting beers from Kelso for years and years and years, Tailgate Joe, and so he basically like buys 10 kegs from us and like serves them outside of Jets games alongside some barbecue. He's kind of nuts. He's like great man. He does every year. But anyway, he's going to bring it this time. He's going to tailgate with us there, so we're going to have barbecue on that. But more importantly, this is not more importantly, but equally as important. New York State is pretty amazing, and Andrew Cuomo has been really supportive and really pushing a lot of legislators to loosen beer laws, relax some beer laws for New York State. So he helped get the farm brewer's license in order, and recently in the last week of the 2016 legislative
session.
We were able to pass a couple new laws, including that now, I'm not sure when it goes into effect, but New York State farm breweries will now be able to serve New York State farm licensed wine and spirits from the tap room as well, which opens up a lot of great doors. Also, now New York State farm cideries will be allowed to sell New York State farm beer, which before it wasn't. New York State farm breweries were allowed to sell New York State farm cider, but it just wasn't. It hasn't been totally even keel all around the board, but all of this is to help increase agriculture towards the fermentation libations that we love. And just thank you, Cuomo. Thank you for a great season, and thanks for all the support within this world of fermentation. Beer.
We'll be back next Monday with more NHC, as well as
Rob Handel
with an update on his
ferments.
Yes, including he's been making fish sauce at home. Can't wait.
Ferment about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Wall with no end on the banks of forgiveness. You clutch to your burden, her waters abate.